After an hour, Jeff had collected 6 bottle shards and a couple of flattened beer cans, but not much else. He was working his way up another washed-out area when he started to pick up something. El Jefe, his metal detector, was practically screaming. Jeff set the detector down and combed through the wet sand with a small hand rake. It caught on something. Jeff still had his earphones on, so all he heard was the sound of his own rapid breath as he scraped the sand with his hands until a glint of silver winked from the wet grains. He could hardly believe it. This was it. He'd found a once-in-a-lifetime discovery, like a coin from a pirate galleon or something, pieces of 8. Wasn't that a pirate treasure coin? Carolyn Eichhorn, in her 2020 Beach Reads first place story, Thalassotherapy. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. My guests this morning are Nancy Sakadusky and Doug Harrell. Nancy is the owner of Cat and Mouse Press, publisher of Beach Reads, featuring the winning stories in the annual Beach Reads short story contest, sponsored by Browse About Books in Rehoboth, Delaware. Doug Harrell is a retired engineer and writer. Doug will read an abridged version of his story, Hiawatha's Smile, that received a judge's award in the 2020 issue of Beach Reads. Nancy and Doug, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Thanks, Hal.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Hal. Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you both here. Nancy, this is our annual visit on the Beach Reads contest. So yes. I'm particularly happy to have you here with this 2020 edition of Beach Reads. And before we hear Doug's story, tell our audience a little bit about Beach Reads and the contest itself.
The Rehoboth Beach Read Short Story Contest runs each year. This is heading into our 9th year. It opens in March and the deadline is July 1st. We look for stories of 500 to 3,500 words. Browse About sponsors the prize money, which is $500 for the first prize, $250 for the second, and $100 for the third. And the top 20 to 25 stories get published in the book that has the name of whatever that year's theme is. So the 2020 book that Doug's reading from was called Beach Mysteries because that was the theme of the contest that year.
So we're dealing with beach mysteries today, right?
Right.
Say something, if you don't mind, about the opening story from my reading, Thalassotherapy, and how this story fits the Beach Reads style. What are you looking for authors with Beach Reads?
Well, first off, we have a panel of 6 judges. So I don't take any part in the actual choosing of the stories. They're chosen by judges. But what the judges look for is an author that's able to interpret that year's theme in an interesting way. And this story opens like a typical beach read. A woman's coming to the beach, she takes off her sandals, there's salty breezes and so forth, but it takes a little bit of a turn and there are several mysteries. It's a multi-character storyline and each character has somewhat of a secret. And then there's a surprise for the reader at the end that was a mystery. So she's incorporated the idea of mystery throughout the story. And the quality of the writing is really exceptional. It's a very well-told story in a very sophisticated format.
Well, I agree with all of that, Nancy. I found the writing Extremely good. Yes. Very, very good. And the story itself is excellent as well. And I was pleased to be able to pull a paragraph from it to share with our audience. Well, let me turn to you, Doug, and ask you if you would read your story, Hiawatha's Smile, to us, a story that received a judge's award.
Thank you, Hal. Hiawatha's Smile, September 2019. I never thought I'd feel sad pulling up to Lucky 13, said Amanda. Zoe agreed. Yeah, it's so different without Grandma Ray standing at the door waiting for us. Amanda drove up the narrow driveway at 13 Brooklyn Avenue, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and stopped just short of a large blue dumpster. The house, a side-by-side duplex, was set well back from the street and shaded by several large pines. The sisters wanted to keep it, but they simply couldn't afford it. As Amanda was unlocking the door, Zoe reached over and stroked the house number. Amanda, don't forget to rub for luck. Amanda ran her fingers over the numbers, adding, and Grandmom would never forgive us if we didn't thank Hiawatha. Giggling, the two women ran upstairs to a small back bedroom. On the wall was a painting of a proud Native American chief pointing toward a woman nursing an infant. Thank you, Hiawatha, said Amanda. Yes, thank you, Hiawatha, Zoe echoed. Then, turning to her sister, Amanda, do you know why we thank Hiawatha? Amanda shook her head. No. I asked Grandmom once, but she didn't know either. Great-grandmother Alice taught her to thank Hiawatha, and she taught Mom, and then us. Zoe reached out and touched the young mother in the painting. That'll be you soon. Not for 6 more months. It's so sad to think of never being able to come here again. I always dreamed we'd spend summers here next door to each other with our own children. Any luck convincing Jack to give my baby a cousin to play with? Not yet. Jack says he needs a promotion first. Either that, or we need to hit the lottery. After a quick lunch, Amanda and Zoe began the sad task of going through their late grandmother's apartment and the guest apartment next door. Amanda was tackling the kitchen when Zoe hurried down from the attic, carrying a red leather book with a gold 1931 embossed on the cover. Amanda, I found great-grandmother Alice's diary. Now I know why we thank Hiawatha. May 1931. Memorial Day was approaching, but the cloudy sky looked like the underside of a bulky quilt, and a chilly breeze was blowing off the Atlantic. A hand-painted sign, furnished house for rent, inquire next door, stood crookedly in front of the right half of 13 Brooklyn Avenue. In the backyard, Alice Gaines leaned over her basket and picked up one of Ray's freshly washed rompers. She was hanging it on the clothesline when a loud voice called out from behind her. Hey, lady. Startled, Alice turned to see a well-dressed man coming around the house. He was wearing a gray pinstripe suit and a gray fedora, but what really caught her eye was the flash of white from his two-toned Oxfords. Hey, lady, I saw your sign out front. Alice wiped her hands on her apron. Yes, are you interested? Could be. Your husband around? Maybe I ought to talk to him. Alice's throat clenched. My husband died in March. Aw, ain't that a shame. I'm sorry. The man touched his hand to the crown of his hat and waited a respectful moment before continuing. So yeah, I'm interested, but I gotta have it right away, and I need it for the whole summer, maybe longer. Can you do that? Alice almost choked. She desperately needed the money. Yes, give me a few hours and I'll get it nice and clean for you. What do you want for it? Steeling herself, Alice said, I'm asking $15 a week, but you'll want to see it first. Nah, I'm sure it'll be fine. Then pointing to the garage at the back of the yard, he said, I got to have the garage too. $20. I'm sorry, what? $20 a week for the house and the garage. The man pulled out a roll of cash and peeled off 4 $20 bills. Here's for the first month. Pocketing the money, Alice replied, yes, that will be quite satisfactory, Mr. Feldman. Benjamin Feldman. Alice Gaines, pleased to meet you, I'm sure. Little noise won't bother you, will it? I shouldn't think so. What kind of noise? Just some sawing and hammering in the garage. I'm an art dealer down here to buy pictures. I have to crate them up before I ship them back to Brooklyn. That's what I like about your place, Brooklyn Avenue. That and a street address. 13's my lucky number. Alice was beginning to feel lucky herself. She handed him the key. See you later. With that, Mr. Feldman touched the brim of his hat and walked out of sight. Later that night, Alice heard a car. Looking out, she saw a black sedan backing into the garage, facing out. Mr. Feldman emerged and swung the doors closed. He removed her padlock and tossed it into the garage before snapping on a new one and walking up to the house. In bed, Alice lay awake pondering. She'd seen plenty of New Yorkers when she and Charlie used to play the ponies in Havre de Grace. Still, it seemed strange that, as an art dealer, Mr. Feldman was so exactly like the kind of person you'd meet at a racetrack. Finally, exhausted, she fell into a deep and well-deserved sleep. The next morning, Alice was weeding the front garden when Mr. Feldman returned with a large framed picture across his back, holding it by the wire. I see you've bought your first picture. Can I look? Sure thing. Mr. Feldman turned so Alice could see. It was a colorful scene of a small harbor with a flock of seagulls hovering overhead. Oh, how pretty. What's it called? Herring guts. Makes sense, I guess, all them seagulls. Suppressing the urge to laugh, Alice gently corrected him. You know what? I bet it's Herring Gut. That's a creek about an hour from here. Mr. Feldman shrugged. Whatever. Do New Yorkers enjoy country scenes like that? You kidding? They can't wait to get their hands on them, especially when they're big. My business associates in Brooklyn like me to send them big paintings. To her surprise, Mr. Feldman locked the painting in the garage. Over the next few hours, Alice noticed Mr. Feldman come and go repeatedly, bringing back paintings, all large. Early the next morning, Alice peeked through the curtains as Mr. Feldman pulled his car out and led two men carrying boards into the garage, closing the doors behind them. Soon, she heard sawing and hammering. Alice wondered why they'd closed the doors. She went outside to peek in the window, but they must have seen her shadow, and moments later, the garage door creaked open. Embarrassed to be found snooping, she climbed the nearest tree and froze. Below her, Mr. Feldman crept forward, arm extended, sunlight glinting off a chrome-plated revolver. After looking around, he returned to the garage. Terrified, Alice gingerly climbed down and tiptoed back into the house, determined to mind her own business. Later that day, Alice saw a white delivery truck backing up the driveway. Two men loaded it with thin rectangular boxes, only slightly larger than Mr. Feldman's paintings. Alice felt silly. Apparently, the art world was more dangerous than she knew. For the rest of the summer, Mr. Feldman brought paintings back to the garage, and every week or so, he would make a trip at night and spend the following day supervising the crating for pickup by the same white van. September 1931. Walking up to the house, Mr. Feldman proudly displayed his latest acquisition to Alice. I landed a big one today. Take a look. The painting was stunning. In it, a Native American chief stood chest out, his left arm extended toward a squaw discreetly nursing the baby she held in her arms. Alice remarked, oh, what a deer picture. Deer's the right word. Cost me $60, but it was worth it. Look how big it is. Alice was always amused at Mr. Feldman's obsession with size and the way he never seemed to know or care about the titles. What's it called? She asked. Some Indian name. It don't matter. Then he smiled. Wait, he's Hiawatha. At that, Mr. Feldman laughed so hard, Alice was afraid he might drop the painting. Still laughing, he carried it to the garage. In the morning, Alice heard the familiar sounds of the men sawing and hammering. They hadn't been at it long when a black sedan screeched to a halt in the driveway and the driver banged on the garage door. Immediately, all four men began carrying paintings out of the garage and tossing them haphazardly into both cars before driving away. One painting had already been crated and was too large to fit, so they left it behind. Alice began to cry. Mr. Feldman's sudden departure left no doubt that both he and his rent money were gone for good. The next day, Alice nearly fainted when she saw a picture of Mr. Feldman on the front page of the Sunday Morning Star next to the headline, G-Men Bust Rum Runners, High-Speed Motor Launch Hiawatha Seized Near Taylor's Island. The article was about a New York outfit that had been landing illegal booze by night along the Eastern Shore. Leading the operation was the boat's owner, Benjamin Little Benny Feldman. No wonder Mr. Feldman had laughed so hard when he called the chief in the painting Hiawatha. Even with the gang safely in jail, it was a week before Alice summoned the courage to deal with the crate Little Benny had left behind. As she pried off the boards, she was delighted to find not Hooch, but the picture he had called Hiawatha. Alice hung Hiawatha upstairs in the nursery where no one would see him. She was ashamed her rent money had come from crime, and Hiawatha always seemed to be looking at her with a conspiratorially cocked head, as though they were in on it together. No matter how often she straightened Hiawatha, the next time she saw him, he was crooked again. One day she asked him, "Why are you so crooked? Are you a crook?" Then it hit her. Initially, Alice hadn't found it odd there was a thin wooden board fastened across the back of the frame. Now, with trembling fingers, she removed the screws and lifted the panel to reveal bundles of cash aligned in neat rows, $5,000 in all. September 2019. "Say, you don't suppose there's still any money back there, do you?" asked Zoe. "No, but I guess we ought to take a look just to be sure." All the sisters found was an empty cavity. Amanda sighed. "Well, that would have been fun, but even the whole 5,000 wouldn't have been near enough for us to keep the house." Zoe nodded. Still hovering over the back of the painting, she ran her finger along the bottom corner. "Look, there's something written here in pencil. Magua said her bosom cannot nurse the children of a Huron. What do you suppose that refers to?" "One way to find out." Amanda did a quick search on her cell phone. "According to Project Gutenberg, it's from The Last of the Mohicans. And get this, our painting looks similar to the illustration shown here." Amanda swiped upward several times, then began hyperventilating. "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." September, 1 year later. With their babies asleep, Amanda and Zoe paid their nightly visit to thank Hiawatha in what was now Amanda's apartment. The new painting was a faithful copy of the original. The only flaw was that the mouth of the imperious chief that sisters would forever refer to as Hiawatha. He now appeared to be smiling. Their great-grandmother Alice's painting had turned out to be the lost N.C. Wyeth illustration that Scribners had found too risque to include in their deluxe edition of The Last of the Mohicans. All those years, Hiawatha had hung there, appreciating in value to well over $500,000. The proceeds from its sale had been enough for the sisters to keep 13 Brooklyn Avenue. The money had also helped Zoe convince Jack it was time to have their own child, born a few months after Amanda's. No wonder Hiawatha was smiling.
Doug, there's got to be a story behind this story. What led you to write this piece, and what kind of research did you have to do on Hiawatha here?
Well, there absolutely is a story. I'm personally very interested in history, and so when I write a story like this, I like to try and weave in some local history. My previous story for Cat and Mouse involved Fort Miles and the Delaware Bay during World War II. And for this story, I wanted obviously a mystery. And I thought, you know, there ought to be a lot of great stories about Prohibition and in Delmarva. So I started researching that, and I had no idea how wild and woolly the Delmarva Peninsula was during Prohibition. So In doing my research, I came across the story of Little Benny Feldman and Bango Shipping and the motor launch that he had fitted out called Hiawatha. It had a sister ship, Whippoorwill, and the two of them were far faster than anything else on the bay, including anything the Coast Guard could summon up. So that's the basis of it. I wanted to cement it in something that really happened and then have some fun with it and take it a little further.
Well, you did a good job with that. Say something more, if you would, about the painting itself.
Well, I told you I'm interested in history. I'm also very interested in art, actually. I'm in the process of learning to be a guide at the Delaware Art Museum. And here in Delaware, of course, we have the Brandywine Valley School. A couple of the big people in that were Howard Pyle, who did a lot of illustrations. He lived in Wilmington and had a studio in Rehoboth. One of his students, N.C. Wyeth, of course, you can see a lot of his paintings at the Brandywine Art Museum. And so I thought, wouldn't it be fun if somehow the art figured into these liquor smugglers? And there was no way for art to figure in hiding actual booze. So I did a little bit of a switch up there and I'm hiding the money from the transaction in such a way that they could ship it back to New York. And the painting Herring Gut is a real painting that N.C. Wyeth did, and you can see it at the Brandywine Art Museum. Also, N.C. Wyeth did illustrate The Last of the Mohicans, but the picture of Magua and the squaw has never been found because he never painted it.
Oh, so it won't do us any good to dig those floorboards up.
It will not, sorry.
In the apartment again. Well, I have to say that like Benny Feldman, I do know some people who did buy their paintings according to size and color scheme to go in their houses. But thank you very much for a really, really good story and a good lesson about the Chesapeake Bay. I greatly appreciate it. Nancy, you're now in the process of the 2021 contest. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Well, the theme Beach Mysteries was so popular and the book itself is selling so well. We wanted something in sort of the same vein. So this year's theme is Beach Secrets, which I think will have a little bit of the same element of interest for both the writers and the readers when the book comes out at the end of this year.
Well, Doug's story could fit in either issue.
It could. But I'm hoping he'll come up with something else.
Well, absolutely.
All the details for the contest are on our website, by the way, catandmousepress.com. There's a whole page on the contest, all the guidelines, hints, tips, what the judges look for, how to submit, all that is on there.
Well, give us that citing again, if you don't mind.
It's catandmousepress.com, and just click on the contest tab.
And how about getting the beach reads that Doug's story is in? How do people buy that book?
Well, it's available in several stores and on the internet, but the main place we sell it is through Browse About Books. They're the contest sponsor, and we really encourage people to support them because they've supported this contest since the first year. And so they're our contest central. So Browse About Books would be the place to go for Beach Mysteries and for any of the other books in the Rehoboth Beach Reads short story series.
Well, because people aren't getting out too much yet. Can they get the book online? Can they order it?
Yes. Although I have to say, having been done several deliveries to Browse About because they keep running out of it, I think people are shopping there, especially for Beach Mysteries. It's done very, very well. But you can ask for it in any bookstore. Any bookstore can order, any independent bookstore can order it for you. It is available. It's not available as an ebook. We don't do ebooks on our fiction because we try to encourage people to buy it through our local stores. Read local, buy local.
Read local and buy local. That's right. I wanted to ask you if the pandemic has had much of an effect on the contest or on the sale of the book at all. Sounds like it hasn't.
It definitely sales were less last year because the stores did have to close at a certain point and had to restrict traffic. But this year, people are coming out in droves. I think a lot of people in this area have had both vaccinations, and Browseabout seems to be getting a lot of people coming in asking for it. As far as the stories themselves, I thought we might get more stories that mentioned COVID or had something to do with COVID last year when we were in the midst of it. And there really were very few. I don't think any of the stories in the book even mention it. I don't know if we'll get more this year. I know for me personally, if I'm at the beach, I don't want to be reading about a pandemic unless it's a fictional pandemic in a different way. I don't want anything to do with reality when I'm reading a beach read. I want to be swept away. So I would say it's probably not a common theme, but it may show up here and there.
No, I was wondering about that because I don't think we have seen very much in general in fiction about the pandemic. It doesn't seem to be showing up.
I think people are sick of it. They're tired of hearing about it. They're monitoring it to make sure they're staying safe. But I think we all want to see it end as quickly as possible.
Tell me a little bit about Beach Reads again. Before Doug read, you were telling us a little bit about it, but what are the characteristics of the style that you're looking for? I noticed that we talked earlier on that these are Beach Reads. That is to say, they're stories that you can deal with literally on the beach and that they are of a length that fits the beach scene anyway. But say a little bit about what you've got in mind with the style of these stories.
I would say one of the reasons the books are so popular is there isn't a set style or format or genre. Every time we release a book, even though the stories are judged and chosen independently and not with a book in mind specifically, the choices that the judges make tend to be so varied because what they're looking for quality of writing, creativity, the use of the theme. And when writers, I mean, listen to Doug's story, it's such an interesting, intriguing twist on, you think mystery, in your mind you have sort of a stereotypical mystery. This fit the theme, but boy was it different and interesting. And that tends to be what the judges look for. So we've had almost any genre you can think of. We even had a Western one year. We've had certainly historical fiction, memoir, mystery, fantasy, sci-fi, noir, almost any genre you could think of has made it into the book in one form or another. And I think that's what's appealing about the series is the stories are so varied.
What's the length that you're looking for, Nancy?
500 to 3,500 words. So it is perfect beach read material because, you know, you can finish a story, you get interrupted at the beach and so forth. You don't get a chance to really concentrate on a novel, but short stories you can take in small doses. So it's a perfect sort of a beach read.
Well, when will the 2021 book be out?
The contest ends July 1st. We have about a month for the judges to go over the stories and then we go into production. It usually comes out by mid-November.
So that's basically the annual publication time for Beach Reads.
Right.
Yeah,
we're on the same timeline each year. It's a different book each year because the theme is different each year and the judges vary a little year to year. So, but that's generally when the book comes out.
So Doug, have you made a new submission or what are you thinking about these days?
Well, of course, the contest this year is Beach Secrets. So I have been pondering what kind of secrets there might be. As Nancy knows, I'm partial to pirates, so I don't know if there's going to be some pirate treasure involved there or if I'm going to find something else. And when I'm not working on her stories for Cat and Mouse Press, I am working on my first novel, which no one should hold their breath on. It's going to be a while, but I'm enjoying the process.
Well, Doug and Nancy, thank you very much for joining me today on Delmarva Today. And Doug, thank you for your story. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks, Hal, for having me on.
Thanks, and Hal.
Thank you, Nancy. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.